each other as human beings again. And the moment we start seeing people as human beings, the moment we realize you, Jen, are someone's, you were someone's baby. Someone gave birth to you. Like I just had a baby a year ago. And when I think about the fact that every person I bump into on the street was someone's baby, you know, that I, it makes, it changes how I, it changes my interaction with them. And if I think about this person, you know, was super rude to me on the metro today, but maybe they just lost their wife the day before, you know, we really need to get back to humanizing each other.
This is Real Talk, the Customer Insight Show with Jen Mancusi, a top-rated live stream and podcast in the market research and insights industry. We stream live on LinkedIn, Twitter, and YouTube, and you can listen to us on all major podcast channels and watch on dbtv.tv. Join Jen and her guests for a weekly discussion around topics that will help you understand your customers better. Real Talk is presented to you by Vox Pop Me, the leader in video research for over a decade. Here's today's conversation.
Hello, insights professionals, marketers, and everyone who wants to understand their customers better. I'm your host, Jen Mancusi. At the end of the day, customers, consumers, users, whatever everybody wants to call them, are humans. So does understanding the entire human experience help companies be better partners to consumers? And how do we conduct this human-centric approach of holistic insights? To discuss the topic, I'm joined by Nikki Lavoie, an SMR Council member and global insights leader. Welcome to the show, Nikki.
Hello, thank you so much for having me. Super excited to be here talking about this.
So happy to have you on the show from all the way across the pond. We are in Europe and the US today. So thanks for joining.
I should have had a croissant with me or something so that people could feel like they were having an international experience.
Totally. You know what? We'll have it in our minds. It's totally fine.
Perfect.
So to get us started, can you tell us a little bit about your career and insights?
Yeah. So despite being based in Paris now, I wasn't born in Paris, in case anyone listening can't tell from my accent. So I'm originally from New England, from New Hampshire, and that's where I got my career started in market research. It's actually one of those, I think a lot of us have similar stories of falling into the field somewhat by accident, and mine is no different. I sort of found myself out of a job through goodwill because I was helping out my former company. And just so happened to come across a small research and consulting agency based out of Portsmouth, New Hampshire. And I loved it. I got started in market research and it was just something that right from the beginning really felt fulfilling and felt exciting. And I was always learning new things. And initially it was actually both qual and quant. And I started to go down the path of being a quantitative specialist, really loved working in SPSS. And I was like a Wincross master for those who have been around long enough to know what Wincross is or was, if it's still around. And yeah, skip ahead a few years later, I ended up getting really involved with qualitative work and ended up really loving that as well. And at the time, it was really fun for me because it meant a lot of travel and a lot of getting out in the world and getting to meet people and getting to have really amazing, engaging conversations with folks I wouldn't normally get to meet. And then thanks to an SMR Congress, I met my future colleagues who ended up offering me a job and a visa to move to France. And that's where I've been for the last 12 years, where I subsequently created and launched and grew my own qual UX agency and sold it last year to Savanta. So I've kind of come full circle.
Congratulations on that, by the way. That's a huge...
Thank you.
Right. It's very exciting. Now, you mentioned you kind of fell into the insights space, which I hear a lot. We at Quirks LA last week, we were having this conversation about how did everybody get into insights, and everybody, you know, now there's degrees for it. But, you know, 10, 15, 20 years ago, it was you start in finance, you start in psychology, you start in marketing and end up in insights. Like, where were you? Where did you think you were going before you landed in insights accidentally?
Actually, I think that my path is sort of a common one in terms of an answer to that question. So I actually studied communications with a concentration in advertising when I was in university. Hi, Jamin. And I thought I was going to be at an ad agency. That's what I went to school for. I wanted to be creating the new tagline for Snickers, or I wanted to be the one like drafting up the storyboards for the commercial for Nike or whatever it was that you were going to see, because I think I had envisioned back then that, and I always say this to folks, that people always see the ad agent, the ad industry as super sexy and like they get to do all this creative work. I mean, Mad Men, right? But like it's still kind of like that. You know, you become like really entrenched in the work, and it felt creative and it felt super fun and inspiring. And while I was studying advertising in college, I did actually have to take a couple courses around. For example, one of the courses that I took was around media and literature review, and another one that I took was on consumer behavior, and another one was on consumer psychology. So I did sort of have the fundamentals of a lot of the things that we have to tap into as market researchers, the way many of us do. You know, lots of folks are will tell you, I studied psychology, I studied sociology, I did this, I did that, and there's all, you know, so much overlap between so many disciplines realistically and what we do. But actually, I think I'm one of the closest. You know, I think I'm actually using a lot of my degree, because even if I'm not creating ads and commercials, as you know, part of the output that I'm generating now, I am still able to tap into my knowledge of branding and marketing science and all of that kind of stuff when I'm giving, you know, strategic insights back to my clients. So, yeah, I feel pretty happy about that.
Yeah, totally. I was also a communications major and forced to
Heyo.
take an SPSS course in college, but I
The
did quite
good
enjoy
old
it.
days.
Yeah, exactly.
And then people were like, why are there binge drinkers in America? And it's like, SPSS courses during university didn't help.
That's the root cause of all the problems we have, right?
Totally.
So we love a good definition here on the show. I'd love to hear your definition of human experience and holistic insights.
Yeah, sure. So they're both a little bit different. And I think there are some companies or some groups that are starting to use them interchangeably, but they're really not the same thing. So I would say that human experience really comes from the adjacent discipline of human-centered design. So I think a lot of people have been hearing about human-centered design, design thinking for quite some time now. It's not really new anymore, but it still does have a little bit of buzz and zest to it, because it's really about thinking about things from a different perspective. And so human experience comes from that, in that, you know, we're really trying to make sure that we go beyond thinking about people as users or customers or employees, aka beyond UX and CX and EX, all of the different X's, which are highly important and do produce really valuable insights in and of themselves. But human experience actually takes into account some of the more intersectional pieces of a person's lived experience. So, as an example, you might be a UX researcher who is studying what somebody experiences when they're interacting with a user interface, how long it takes them to complete a task, you know, how easy or difficult it is to navigate around a certain type of thing that you'd like to understand. Human experience pushes beyond that and looks a lot at the why. So one of the things we know with UX in particular is that UX research does tend to rely quite heavily on qualitative. But even within that qualitative context, it tends to be a very task-driven qualitative approach. And human experience goes beyond and makes sure that you integrate all of the whys back in. And I don't want to be super generic and say it's about the whys, because anyone working in market research will tell you, well, isn't that always the value and added input of qualitative? So is human experience just qualitative on top of everything else? And it really isn't. I mean, I think human experience is also trying to understand, what does a person's socioeconomic status have to do with their impact when they're interacting with a user interface? Or what does it have to do with how they perceive an interaction from a customer experience professional? Or what does it have to do with how they might perceive your brand as an employee? So there's a lot of different sort of layers of how you can understand what a human being experiences when they are interacting with your product, brand, or service. And then on top of that, to talk about holistic insights, which is a closely linked category but isn't exactly the same thing, I would say holistic insights adds on actually two additional layers of context. So one is simply about triangulation. So if we think about the fact that you might be trying to explore, again, somebody's interaction with your UI or your product, digital or face-to-face, the thing that we can probably guess is if somebody has a really good user experience, a really smooth user experience, your user interface is flawless, they come in, they're trying to get more information about your product, brand, or service, or maybe they're trying to make a purchase, and that experience and that user interface works really well, then it's probably very likely going to impact the customer experience. Now, of course, the customer experience is a separate interaction, and it's going to have its own sort of bases for why people feel the way they do about that experience, but they are actually quite interrelated. And you can imagine there are a couple of big brands today who I won't name in case any of those folks are listening or watch this video, but there are some brands who have come under fire lately about their employee experience. Some of the employees have spoken out and said, you know, we are being worked 80 hours a week. We're not getting bonuses. You know, there's huge, you know, gender pay disparities or racial pay disparities, whatever. And the, you know, that understanding and perception of the employee experience can then have an impact on the customer experience or even on the user experience. So holistic insight is really about the triangulation across the different X's, but also beyond the different X's. So another example could be really, really great user experience is very likely to positively impact brand perception. It might also have an impact on how much people are willing to pay for your product, brand, or service. It might also have an impact on which features are going to be best optimized with your you know, for your offering according to your target audience and according to your group, depending on your UI. And all of these things can be, you know, said across, you know, anything, customer experience and employee experience. So it's really about triangulation. And then I would say the second element of the holistic insight definition that I think is really important is understanding things. I always tell people that I picture in my mind this sort of spectrum whereby people become aware of a product, brand, or service, and then where they, you know, it's where they enter the consideration set. So maybe I've bought a house. Now that I'm a homeowner, I am now going to start looking for, let's say, home insurance. So I've bought the house. I've now entered the consideration set. I may be a user for as long as I'm going onto your website and looking up information about that insurance product or even buying it. I may be a customer when I actually have to talk to you about a need that I have, file a claim, whatever. And then I may have some thoughts or experiences around my perception of the employee experience. So your employee experience is going to impact me as a user, even if I'm not an employee. And then let's say I decide I don't want to own a house anymore. It's not for me. I'm just going to go, like, I don't know, do a timeshare condo rental something. And I'm no longer a homeowner and I'm never going to be interested in your product ever again. Maybe not for anything that you've done. This constitutes sort of a spectrum whereby people come into contact with whatever it is. But actually human beings' lives are so much before that and so much after that. And holistic insights is also talking about taking those things into consideration as well. So I think one of the easiest examples for people to wrap their heads around when I'm talking about holistic insights is the idea of things like corporate social responsibility and sustainable product development. So if you are developing an actual product, maybe it's dog food, again, somebody comes into the consideration set, they go through all of these stages of being interacting with you. And then let's say that they decide, I don't have any more dogs. I don't want any more dogs for whatever reason. I'm never going to buy dog food again. But if your product was sustainably developed and designed, then that's going to impact my life as a former user for the better in the long run. And it may mean that I'm going to, you know, maybe you'll have higher NPS scores because I'll be more willing to refer your product to my friends because your product is less harmful to the planet. Maybe it means that I'm going to eventually have grandchildren who have a dog who then will buy their, you know, dog food from you, not even necessarily because of a recommendation or a referral, but because simply there is a planet on which we can live with dogs. So there's a lot of things around mental health, physical health, emotional health, planetary health that if we look at people only in the vacuum of the consideration set all the way through to being a churned or lapsed user, we're really limiting how much information we are able to collect and how much impact we actually genuinely have on people's lives. So holistic insight for me has both of those components around triangulation, but also thinking bigger about your impact on people beyond just in terms of their relationship with your product.
This is all super interesting and
mind blown.
Yes. And it sounds like really the perfect ideal. It's like every business should be striving towards this sort of goal, but it's tough to get there. You know, it's not super easy to, adjust the mindset to think in that way. But also I'm curious your perspective on, how should companies be thinking about moving in this direction when there's different functions that are responsible for different parts of what you're talking about? And oftentimes they're not, working toward the same goals. They're sitting on different teams. They're different reporting lines. You've got a UX team who's reporting up through product and a CX or an MR. How do you think about bringing those things together when you've got a company of 10,000 people and everybody's kind of doing something different?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you've hit the nail on the head, and this is what makes you a great podcast host, because if everybody asks this question, then we would probably be somewhere closer to a solution by now. But, I think in terms of at least in the market research domain, if one more person says cross-functional, we're all probably going to roll over and die, right? Like, we all know this is the crux of the problem. And we all know that if we could just crack the code to cross-functionality, there would be a lot greater learning that we could have. And there's loads of recommendations out there on how to do it. I would say, this is not why I'm on this podcast, but tiny little plug for Savanta. One of the things that we are working on is trying to come up with something that does make it easier for companies to kind of get around the sort of, I hesitate to call them silos, because I feel like that's such an emotionally charged word. Mm-hmm. Now people hear silo and they think like, oh, but that's not how I set up this department, and that wasn't the intention. Totally could be unintentional, but there are these sort of inherent, as you mentioned, there's different stakeholders. The budgets are coming from different places. I mean, UX budgets are coming out of product development, market research budgets are coming out of the marketing department, employee experience budgets are coming out of HR. So, there's completely different objectives, different stakeholders, different amount of money being spent, but there are things that we need to start considering bringing to the table. So things like an index or a scorecard or a sort of more comprehensive framework. So it would be easy enough for me to say, well, just get all the people who do anything to do with insights around a table once a month and have them talk about whatever. We all know that that's easier said than done. And even when you do that, that doesn't necessarily present the solution, right? Because the market research people are going to say, but this is a priority. And the user research people are going to say, well, we're not going to have anything to market if the product is broken. Mm-hmm. And then the EX people are going to say, well, there's not going to be a way to fix the product if we don't fix the employees and their, their experience and how they're feeling. So everyone is going to come to the table with a different set of priorities. And so I think one of the things that you're going to see a lot of companies doing, like Savanta, is going to be coming up with indexes and matrices, which are actually going to put all of these things, put sort of the key elements from these different pieces of outreach and of insight together into something of a scorecard, so that actually the top priorities from UX are actually measured against the top priorities with CX, against the top priorities with EX, so that you can actually have a holistic view of what's going on across the company, across all of their different, most important measuring points. And it will provide sort of an inherent roadmap that says, okay, these are all the things that are coming up, but these three are glaringly, need to be addressed, or these three areas are areas where we're definitely winning. What can we do about that? And it should inherently provide a little bit more of a comprehensive roadmap where there does start to be a lot more cross-functional collaboration.
Yeah, for sure. That's really an interesting concept of the index. It really has to kind of come from the top, right? Like, everybody has to be bought in. It's not necessarily something that can filter up in certain ways. I guess, are there companies out there that you think are doing this well? Or do you think, companies aren't really approaching it this way? Like, why is that?
Yeah, so I actually attended the IIEX APAC event last, oh gosh, it wasn't last week anymore, a couple of weeks ago. It was this month in Bangkok in Thailand. And there was a researcher there from Lazada. And what I loved about her is that she, like many of us, comes from a long and rigorous market research background. And then by happenstance, she ended up working more and more and more in UX as her career went on. And one of the things that's great about what she was able to accomplish was she sort of pulled in all of this sort of triangulation that market researchers are already having to do between the brand tracker and the pricing optimization study and the qualitative IDIs that somebody did around this concept. But again, all of those live within kind of the marketing or the CMI function. But she was able to, bring together that idea of we need to put all of the items on the table, somehow find a way to, I wouldn't say rank order them, but assign significance to them and to be able to talk about them holistically. So she did, of her own volition, create an index and get all of the other insights folks from all of the different functionalities on board to contribute to that index. And now they're able to meet. We were talking when I spoke with her last, I think she said that they're meeting, I can't remember now if it's monthly or quarterly, but it doesn't have to be every 5 minutes, but it's whenever they've got fresh new research that's coming in off the back of, whatever study that they're doing, they get together, they have a look, they evaluate, and it really does kind of help them. So in terms of creating this sort of triangulated holistic point of view, I would say Lazada is one, which for those of you who don't know what it is sort of like Amazon in the APAC region, so an e-commerce retailer. And then I would say for a company that those of us know well, I can't say what they're doing internally around, how are they making sure that they measure all of these different, data points holistically and triangulate them. But I would say at least from an output perspective and that concept of thinking beyond just the consideration set through to lapsed or churned user would be Unilever. I think Unilever is doing a great job of saying, look, nobody asked us to reevaluate our supply chain relationships to make sure that we're doing things in a more sustainable way, but we know it has to be done. They've got internal committees around DEI&A to make sure that their products are more accessible, their workplace is more accessible. They've been lauded in the last couple of years several times for changing their ad campaigns around a couple of key different products to make sure that there's more representation there. So I'm sure in some ways they are being asked to do some of these things. I have no doubt that there's probably somebody somewhere saying, hey, I don't see myself in this product, but I really love this product. So is there not something that you can do about that? But I think, it would be easy for a company the size of Unilever to turn and look away from that and say, like, well, we've already got the profits. And I think that's kind of the key as well when it comes to that second point of holistic insights is some of the decisions that will need to be made off the back of holistic insights might necessarily not be those that push for greater profits in the short term, but they will be the ones that lead to greater long-term and more secure long-term relationships with human beings. Because like I said, if we're destroying the planet, then pretty soon there's going to be no product, no deodorant to sell. So I think, yeah, the fact that Unilever is really doing a lot of various different things to kind of tackle its impact on the people who interact with its products, to me is very impressive.
Yeah, I think that's such an important point and one that I think a lot of people struggle internally to prioritize. That idea of the kind of this is building us up for the long term to have better relationships with human beings, not to have better sales from customers. And I think whether you're a small business or a massive company like Unilever, there's always that conversation of like, what does a focus on sustainability or on DE&I have on, our profits or our revenue achievement or something like that. And it's all interconnected, right? Creating a better employee experience is going to provide a better output from your employees and so on and so on and so on. But the focus on the revenue number or the profit number today can distract from some of those other things. I think that's such an important topic right now on its own. We could talk about that in a separate episode.
We could do a whole other episode about that. Yeah, no, and I think you've totally hit the nail on the head as well in that, There are a lot of economists out there who can show you the graphs that show, like, if you focus on the short-term gains, which is like the profits now, for the UXers in the world, it's the increased engagement. Let's get as much engagement as possible. What does engagement even mean? And then if you're, for example, a tech app and you're focused on increased engagement, it's just like, okay, now you've got somebody spending hours on your phone. On their phone, on your app, to the point where they develop mental health issues, or to the point where they burn out, and then they throw their phone into the ocean because they go, oh, I can't deal with this anymore. Well, now they're not engaged with your app at all. So that idea to increase engagement in the short term without any kind of regard for what is the holistic implication of that increased engagement is now going to have medium and long term negative impacts on your ROI. For the development of that, cooler app or whatever. So, I mean, there's loads of things like, people talk about getting annoyed. Like, if Netflix asks me one more time if I'm still watching this because I'm binge watching something, and it's like, yes, but actually, it's really great that they do that. And like, how many times has it happened when you've been like, oh yeah, I could probably use a bathroom break right now, or maybe I should, make myself another cup of tea, and then you end up being out, away from the TV for 10 minutes, and that is 10 minutes of brain health that you desperately needed that Netflix knows, and it's because they do things like that that actually they are able to kind of maintain these really strong relationships with viewers because they are looking out for your mental health, and you know that about them.
Yeah, you've just put into context for me the videos that on TikTok that are like, you're still scrolling. You might need a break. You're like, shut up, TikTok. I just want to keep scrolling. But yeah, it is about, making sure you're taking care of your people, and you want them to use it more, but not to that degree.
Yeah. So I would say anytime you're getting a little like twinge, like kick in the butt from a TikTok or a Netflix, you're like, human experience. These people are into it. These people
Right.
get it.
They're thinking about the people, right? And I guess, I mean, you started to touch on this a bit just a second ago, but this is what I wanted to ask you next. Like, how do companies know that a seemingly unrelated human experience is going to impact their business? Because as much as we don't want to be the short term, kind of revenue number to be, or the usage number, the engagement number to be the focus, how do you know that your whatever unrelated human focus you have is actually going to have an impact there? Because that is still important.
Well, I would say again, I'm not trying to just like, push qualitative research because that's kind of been my background for the last couple of years. But I would say that it qualitative research and specifically research focused with an ethnographic lens and an anthropologic lens is going to be absolutely crucial there because what you're talking about, how will companies know when there's something seemingly unrelated that can have an impact is genuinely the I don't know what I don't know. So in order to figure out those things, you need to be doing things like foundational research, exploratory research. I mean, it's literally about like, I'm just going to go sit down next to some Netflix users on their couch and spend some time with them and see what happens and kind of see because, all the surveys in the world can't necessarily tell you what happens when somebody's been watching 3 hours of Netflix, without a break. So I think that's kind of it is that you need to be there needs to be a sort of company-wide commitment to doing things like exploratory and foundational research and to prioritizing ethnographic style research, not prioritizing it over, your key brand tracker or some other piece of data that you're collecting on a regular basis that serves as a really important guidepost for you. But it also has to be, I mean, ethnographic research should be something that is taken on with regularity, even if you don't necessarily see a need for it. The need is we always need to make sure that we are understanding how people's behaviors are changing. I mean, none of us saw, I wouldn't say none of us, Bill Gates, 2015, very few of us saw that there was a pandemic coming when it came. And all of our relationships with scrolling media and entertainment media changed in that instant because what you used to be doing after work with your colleagues or after work with your partner or after work with your friends, now you were it was work and then you were at home. And so, there was a lot, it was a huge uptake in media consumption. And I think when we talk about, making sure that we're paying attention to people through an ethnographic lens, I would say that, if you're doing ethnographic style research or exploratory or foundational research with any degree of regularity, A, you're unlikely to learn nothing. So let's say that a company decides, oh, we're going to just go out there and do some exploratory ethnographies quarterly. It's extremely unlikely that even if you go into it saying, we don't know what we don't know, it's extremely unlikely that you're going to come back and say, wow, I learned nothing valuable from that experience. And then in the off chance that you learn nothing valuable from that experience, what you've still learned is, okay, well, we're on track. What we're doing right now is working, or something. There's no disruption that we need to be aware of, or there's no key, element of behavior, element of humanity that's shifting that we need to adjust. I mean, obviously, it's a little bit more complex than that because you can't just go out to someone's house and sit there without, any idea of what you're looking for, the questions to ask. But at the same time, I mean, it really is about people getting out there and trying to explore things and trying to uncover things in a really authentic and natural way. So I would say, that's the key way that companies have to be taking into account what might be unrelated is actually related, and it's going to be a focus on exploratory and ethnographic research.
I love what you said of, I don't know what I don't know, and just kind of, there's an element of humility to that, of needing to kind of say, hey, like we can't ever be 100% on the right track, right? Let's open our minds to other possibilities and see what we can discover. And like you said, like you're never going to not learn something, even if it's just, oh, a reminder, there's real people behind the numbers in that brand tracker or on that quantitative survey, right? This is real humans that are interacting with our business and our products. Like sometimes you need that reminder that it's real people.
Totally. And I feel like one of the examples that people tend to point to a lot is, and I hope I'm not misquoting this, but I think one of the examples, at least I've heard a lot over the course of my career, is like, well, Apple said, Steve Jobs said that if he asked people what they actually wanted in terms of, a music player, they would have said that they wanted to be able to carry like six more CDs in their Discman. But the idea of moving away from carrying physical media to carrying digital media didn't just pop into Steve Jobs' head because he was a genius. Undoubtedly, he was ethnographically observing people around him and seeing in real life what were the pain points. Ah, the CD scratches. Ah, the thing skips. Oh, I can't run with it. Oh, it's very bulky. And then an idea came, well, what if we got rid of the physical media and we were only dealing with digital media? How would that change the experience? And I have no doubt that he probably didn't go out and ask someone before, working with teams to design that product, hey, should we create? Because they would have, it was a very revolutionary and disruptive idea at the time. And I think people would have had a hard time wrapping their head around it. But the idea didn't just come to Steve Jobs in a moment, a flash moment of genius. I mean, it was rooted in ethnographic observation. So I think, and that's probably going to be the case for anyone who is a genius is probably observing all the time and then, taking actions that correspond with the need sets that they identify as a result of those observations.
Yeah, I love the way you've described that. It always makes me laugh. Like, I don't think any company out there is asking people, what should we build? Right? Like, that's
Yeah,
not actually the
exactly.
function of research, right? When you simplify it that way, there's a Henry Ford quote that's the same. Oh, or he didn't say it, but
I
if
want
Henry
more horses, faster
Ford, yeah,
horses or
faster
whatever.
horses, people would say they want faster, but nobody, we're not, you're not going out and saying, what should we build for you? It's what problem are you having in this situation or with this product that you can then take away and get creative with the solution? And
Yeah.
thinking you know what people want is what prevents you from actually asking that question, right?
100%.
I heard somebody say this at a conference last fall, speaking, saying certainty is the death of innovation. And that, when I think about the, ethnographic observation and the need to really just like be open-minded to maybe what we're making isn't the best we could be making. Maybe there's some new white space we haven't even explored before because there are new problems that are emerging in people's lives. Like, what are what are our consumers beyond the fact that they consume our products, right?
How many things can you picture in your own life? I'm trying to look around for an example, but like, how many things can you picture in your own life where you're like, it was designed for that, but I actually use it for this, you know? So it's totally. Like, I think that, and like, I've got kids and kids are the example, right? So like, I've got, you know, one of my youngest daughters, we have one of these like carts that's supposed to be bringing, you can put a bunch of toys in it and she can cart it around the house. It is not designed to be one of those things that helps kids learn to walk because it just goes. There's no stability. There's no like braking mechanism. There's no nothing. It just goes. That's how she wants to use it right now because she's on the verge of walking. So every time she sees it, she's like, this thing is going to help me walk. And that is not what it is designed for, but that is what it's being used for. So, I mean, I think, I totally agree with what you're saying. It's like, not only is it about, should we consider that there might be a better way to design something or a better product for things, but how many times have we, a phone was designed to be a phone. And when's the last time you made a call? it's not a phone anymore. It's a little computer and we still call it a phone and still can make calls, but now we use it for searching things and booking restaurants and connecting with our friends and taking photos of our kids and, you know, all of these kinds of things. So I think if people didn't go out and observe how someone was using a phone, or the first time a camera got put in the phone and they were saying, actually, then this could be the feature that drives the phone forward. The camera could be the feature. Somebody thought that because they were observing the first little, what was it? 1 megapixel camera that got put into a Motorola flip phone or something. And it turned into something that's like changed all of our lives. So all of that really is going to be rooted in observation, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, all right. I think we may have touched on this a little bit, but when we're thinking about actually putting holistic insights into practice, what are some ways? You talked about the index and scorecard. What are some other ways that companies can be thinking about actually implementing this?
Yeah. Well, I mean, one sort of big overarching idea that I think can't lead you astray is if you do have something like a corporate responsibility plan, I think that's one of those things where if you are thinking about things in terms of corporate and social responsibility, and you're always trying to have physical, mental, emotional, and planetary health in mind, then that is one way where you're going to be then looking at, okay, well, what is the, makeup of the clothing that I'm manufacturing? What are the different elements? What's the environmental impact of the different elements of this product I'm developing? What are the environmental impacts of all of the server usage that's gone into, all of this, streaming media? So I think having a CSR plan and or person heading that up in place is one of the ways that you can ensure that holistic insights are always going to be something that you think about and that you can then go out and do. But I would say on a very broad level, it's really about talking to people. I mean, there's going to be so much data collection happening around surveys and data lakes and data science and analysis and all this kind of stuff. And none of that has to go away. But talking to people is what realistically drives home the fact that they are human beings. It's very easy to see someone as a data point. It's really easy to say, okay, well, we know that single women over 35 that have one child do X or buy Y product. But until you talk to them, it feels really easy to dehumanize them and to design solutions that don't necessarily take a comprehensive need set into account, which isn't to say that your product has to meet every need. But if you don't understand the depth and the extent to which that person has needs or what their needs are, then your product only ever has a chance of being, limited in scope and limited in terms of value that it provides to this particular person. So I think talking to people is it, which is why, obviously VoxPopMe, I think, is one of those things that I think for a lot of companies has just revolutionized the way that they think about insights and being able to move from things like user experience to human experience. Because yes, qualitative research is sort of the backbone of UX in many organizations. But it is very task driven. So it's like, I'm going to sit down next to you at a lab, or I'm going to sit down and do a remote IDI with you, where I watch you navigate a website to, you know, book a vacation or pay for a product or fill out a form. And that's not, in many cases, that's not exactly, you know, when they would be filling it out. Maybe they're filling it out with a screaming toddler in the background. Maybe they would be filling it out on a bus, you know, and until you get out there and you actually talk to these people in a more exploratory way, rather than just a sort of set lab qualitative academic kind of fashion, then, you know, you're not necessarily taking into account all of the human factors. So I think talking to people and what you guys have been doing over the last couple of years has really allowed a lot of companies to go, oh, we know the survey says this, and we kind of know why, because we ask them open ends, and we get the why, but it doesn't hit home the same, doesn't hit the same. And the stakeholders are not feeling as motivated when they just see a number that says 54% of people chose this card because it was green. You know, but if you hear people say it was green and golf is my favorite sport and it made me think of golf because I love it so much, and it's such a, and this person says, oh, it's green because my child's favorite Sesame Street character is the one who lives in the trash can. I don't know his name because we don't have Sesame Street over here. But, you know, like, there's going to be things, and those individual little things that you can take out of talking to people are inherently going to be catalysts for the growth that your brand can experience in the medium and long term, I will say, because we do need to be paying attention to all of the health factors that will probably have an impact in the short term.
Yeah, for sure. I just had this conversation yesterday with about how more memorable it is when you hear from individuals and how we remember their names. I mean, there's people
totally
from our community from years ago, from, you know, I can say, hey, remember Lou from the UK? She was so great. You know, like, we remember the people, and I don't remember the 38% of women who did XYZ, right?
Yeah.
For the individuals, and that does, like you said, it hits different. It has a different impact when you're making those decisions about those and for those real people.
Yeah. And I would say as well, like, this is a little bit of a bold statement of mine, so maybe I'll get some not very nice emails after this, but, you know, I think that the whole world for some time now has been going in a direction of, you know, super speed capitalism and super speed, you know, purchasing and buying as much as we can and making products as cheap as we possibly can to manufacture and to deliver so that profits are, you know, as maximized as they can possibly be. And I think part of the reason why it's so easy to do that is because we're not necessarily seeing people as human beings anymore. And that's why it's so much more important right now than ever before to be thinking about human experience and to be thinking about holistic insights, because yes, on the one hand, you can say, well, we're more connected than ever because we have social media and we have TikTok and we have Pinterest and we have Instagram and we can see people and connect with people and stay in touch. But we have almost become sort of digital avatars of ourselves, right? So, like, I have no idea what's going on with my former next door neighbor from New Hampshire. I just know that she posts these three pictures. But now I think I know what's going on with her because she's posted those three pictures, but I actually don't. So that is me on an individual level taking data and extrapolating my insights based on that data and thinking that I know something about her. But undoubtedly, if I spoke to her, it would change my interpretation of that data. So I think that that's collectively as a species, we are sort of all we're all inundated with data and we're all appreciative of that data. But, you know, it's sort of one of those things that we need to kind of get around and start seeing each other as human beings again. And the moment we start seeing people as human beings, the moment we realize you, Jen, are someone, you were someone's baby. Someone gave birth to you. Like, I just had a baby a year ago. And when I think about the fact that every person I bump into on the street was someone's baby, you know, that it changes my interaction with them. And if I think about this person, you know, was super rude to me on the metro today, but maybe they just lost their wife the day before, you know, we really need to get back to humanizing each other and the world at large if we are going to kind of steer ourselves back on the track in terms of sustainability and actions that protect each other.
I totally agree. I don't think it's super controversial. I think everybody, yeah, like we we need to be thinking about each other more. If you haven't already, you should have a conversation with Rob Wolpe about the empathy crisis. I think you guys would.
Yeah, I love Rob. He's so great. I need to get myself a signed copy of his book, Rob, if you're listening.
Definitely. I think he's sharing them out to special people. So yeah, I think you can get a copy. Now, before we wrap up the episode, SMR elections are open at the moment and you are running for president. Anything you want to say?
What an opportunity. I did not know this was coming. Heyo, I'll get to plug myself. Okay. Actually, yes, there is something really interesting that I wanted to say, which is one of the things that I have been trying to accomplish. So I've now been on the SMR Council for a little over 4 years. And I think that there are some people out there who, might be aware that in recent months there was something, you know, that kind of happened that was maybe not seen favorably by people. But, you know, I've got 2 points to make around that. One is that disruption is very rarely comfortable. And the right decisions are very often uncomfortable ones to take. So I think it's worth noting that, SMR has moved in a decision that, you know, we felt was right for the association, given our promise to be an ethical association. So I feel like that's worth stating for the record, because I think I haven't said it yet. You know, people are sort of like, and how do you feel? And it's like, well, there are a lot of feelings around going through something like, you know, invalidating election results and then running the election again. It's not convenient. It's not fun. We wouldn't do it if it wasn't the right thing to do. So I think people should just rest assured that, you know, a lot of time and energy and thought went into these decisions before taking them. And then the second point that I would make is one of the things that I've been working on as part of the SMR Council in the time that I've been involved is things like crossover and cross-functional conversations. And so given my sort of love and affinity for the UX community, I've been trying really hard to find ways to sort of link up the UX community with the market research community and others, right? So there's obviously, we've got a lot of conversations, fires and pokers in the fire around data science. But for me in particular, it's UX. And I just saw recently that SMR just this week released its latest work on from, you know, its demographics committee, you know, talking about how we should be approaching demographics globally, demographics questions in screeners and questionnaires. And this is the exact kind of thing that I was thinking of. I see loads of questions in my UX communities, like how do we ask these questions and how do we respect and how are we accessible? And SMR is over here putting in all this legwork and collecting all this data and talking to all these people on the ground and putting out this really comprehensive set of recommendations. And it's that kind of cross-functional conversation that I really hope that I can drive forward and foster should I get into the position of president. So I think there's just a lot of co-learning to be done there, things that they can learn from us, they as in UXers. I hate to they us the whole thing, but things that UXers can learn from market researchers and things that market researchers can learn from UX researchers. So yeah, that's one of the things that I'm excited to hopefully be able to get my hands dirty with.
Amazing. Well, thank you for that. Good luck in the elections. Anyone who's an SMR member, please make sure you go out and vote. I think you have another week or two. So get out there.
Yep. Thank you so much
for coming on the show today. This was a great conversation. I think there's probably a lot more we could talk about on this topic. And I really appreciate you coming on.
Thanks, Jen.
Thanks for joining us and listening in. We're going to be back later this week with another show on Friday. See you then.